Hello, everyone, and welcome into CrushTheStreet.com. Man, we got a great week coming up. We got conversations about crypto, what's going on in precious metals. But this specific interview that we're doing right now is going to be a focus on what's going on with energy, oil, renewables. You know, what's going on with Iran? Why is oil doing what it's doing? Is oil relevant here in 2019 and going forward, or is there going to be a decline in the reliance on fossil fuels? And what is the impact that is going to have on our economy and our daily lives for that matter? So with that being said, I have on the line Rob West. He's an equity analyst who has moved towards consultancy. You know, what is the future of energy? His website is thundersaidenergy.com. We'll have the link in the description area. Rob, thanks for coming on Crush the Street with me today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Rob, we've seen oil move, you know, most recently 10% higher from its low earlier this year when it, you know, bottomed out. I mean, Brent crude is around $65 right now. Now, going back a number of years, I mean, we've seen it at like 140, right? You know, right in the 2008 area. From 2011 to 2014, we were hovering around $100 a barrel. And then, you know, since then, it's been much lower. You know, what's the, I kind of want to get the macro picture of what's going on with oil and energy. And, you know, the need for oil and crude oil in, you know, as we go forward here in the 21st century.
Well, it's a great place to start because that's about the broadest question in the whole world. Let me take a stab at how I would approach it. I like to think about the oil market like a clock. You've got the second hand, which is driven by short-term disruptions that remain incredibly humbling for any analyst to ever try to predict, because they're explosions in Libya or tanker attacks in the Straits of Hormuz. You know, nobody can predict this stuff. And so I think that the place where it gets really instructive as an analyst is, well, what can you predict? And as a numbers guy, my preferred approach is something called marginal cost. So what is that? Marginal cost is an estimate of what it costs you to find, develop, produce, and commercialize the marginal barrel of oil into the market. And you talked about that journey from, you know, $120 a barrel down to peak troughs in the 20s and back up to where we are right now. You know, this has really been driven by a total change in the terms of trade for this industry. I like to think about it in terms of these big disruptive forces that are all driven by technology and transforming everything in energy. But in oil, there's two in particular which have caused that deflation. The first one is the rise of shale. So, you know, for the first 150 years of this industry, we were getting oil out of reservoir rocks, porous and permeable sandstones and carbonates. And really, starting a decade ago, the industry started unlocking hydrocarbons straight from the source rock, from shale. This is rock that should not be flowing oil. And we've figured out the way to crack it open and get the oil out. And if you look at the productivity in shale, it has doubled since 2015. And it's going to double again after 2025. And really, if those numbers are right, and that technology analysis is right, shale can produce as much oil as the world needs at the bottom of the cost curve, but something around $30 a barrel.
So let's stop right there real quick. That was a huge thing for the U.S. I mean, the Permian Basin, the Bakken. You know, the U.S. is a net producer now of oil, I believe. So what is the implication on that going forward with the oil price? And, you know, is it, how does that compete or conflict with everyone's initiative to want to go green and to want to get away from fossil fuels?
Okay, well, Let's take those two in turn. So when you think about the outlook for shale, it's really all about productivity. And this is why I quit my job as an equity analyst to become a technology analyst, is because really, if you get this productivity piece right, that's the whole question. That's the whole answer. If shale productivity flatlines here, then the Permian will get to about 10 million barrels a day and then it'll peak. And the reason for that is that the monthly additions that you're capable of adding with all the rigs will eventually be matched by the monthly decline rate, right? So you're drilling all the time, you're bringing new wells on all the time, you're fracking them all the time, and just eventually you get to a level where, you know, the decline rate is so high, you can't grow anymore. If productivity keeps improving at the rate it has been, then the Permian can get to something like 25 million barrels a day. And I know that sounds like an enormous number, but you have to go through some of the really gritty technical details of what's driving productivity upwards. So I've counted 50 dimensions where productivity has improved since 2014. This is after going through 400 technical papers. And really, if you look at every single one of those, they keep improving. So if you'll let me bore you, I'll go into some of those and some of the biggest improvements in shale. But let's pause on that note and then kind of address the second question. Because you asked another really intriguing question there about, you know, is oil going to be needed in the future? And really the answer is it depends. So the oil market we like to think of as one big homogenous thing, but it's not a monolith. There are aspects of oil where, you know, I'm looking at electrification technologies that are up to 50 times more economical per passenger mile than burning oil is. And it's unimaginable to think the world is not going to take these productivity gains that are being handed to it on a plate. On the other side of the spectrum, I was just thinking some numbers before we talked about powering a Boeing 747 with batteries. Right, I'll just give you the example. How far can a Boeing 747 go? About 14,000 kilometers, powered by jet fuel. Take that same Boeing 747, at current battery technology, and how far can you get it? About 90 kilometers, and then it runs out of energy, and the batteries don't have enough to keep it going. So, you know, this is good if you want to go from London to Bristol. It's not so good if you want to go from London to Houston. And so, you know, you can compartmentalize the oil market. Some of it's going to electrify away. Some of it is just going to remain, you know, really necessary. And so even on the most aggressive decarbonization bridges I'm running, I still have 40 million barrels a day of oil being burned by 2100. So yeah, that's an enormous question. I've done huge numbers of models on it. But it becomes quite complex. So
sure. Well, let me throw this nuance at you. I mean, this is an interesting thing. I mean, I know that there's a lot of subsidies that the oil companies get, same way with, you know, a lot of the renewables. They're starting to get all these subsidies too. But I know there's this push to, you know, remove the subsidies from the oil companies. So there's maybe a less, you know, free market advantage for these companies, while, you know, the renewables get that advantage and, you know, becomes more cost effective for people, at least, you know, on the surface, to go towards renewables. And, you know, how does that start to play when you really have these governments starting to interfere with what should be done going forward?
The term subsidy is, I feel really bad. I feel like every time you ask a good question, and I keep dodging it by saying, well, actually, what you mean by that question has lots of different components. But subsidies are all over the place. There are some countries still today which are, you know, I mean, I lived in one, but oil was cheaper than water, right? And it was because there was a giant petroleum subsidy keeping gasoline prices basically at zero as a kickback to local people. And governments have those policies. There's questions whether they're really the right policies for a world that's trying to decarbonize. On the other hand, you know, I think when you talk about oil companies, I'm not 100% sure I know what you mean when you say that they're subsidized. I mean, there are capital allowances for enormous investments, but I wouldn't necessarily call that a subsidy. I mean, you know, we've got an industry that has to spend $2 trillion a year across all of energy. And really one of the biggest questions amidst the uncertainty of the energy transition is, where's that capital going to come from? And so I'm not sure that, you know, getting rid of capital allowances would necessarily help this multi-decade transition that we've got to navigate our way through.
Okay, Rob. Well, so let's talk about this for a second here. Crude oil is at $65 US, roughly. What should it be priced at based on what's going on? Because a lot of times what we look at, you know, is mispriced, you know, based on what we see coming, right? You know, when we were looking at Bitcoin at $3,000 in February of this year, January of this year, we looked at it and I go, you know what? It probably should be a lot higher, you know? There's many nuances that are obviously affect the price. It's not just one binary thing, as you pointed out. There's a lot of components. But in your opinion, based on what you look at, is $65 fair, or should it be 100? Should it be 30? Well, where does your analysis lead you to think oil is headed?
Well, the eternally humbling thing about forecasting the oil market is that any view becomes self-refuting. There is no fair price of oil. It doesn't work like that. It bounces around. It's cyclical. And where we are right now, I can make some helpful comments, I promise. We're in the $65 world where shale has not really been growing for the last few months. And the reason is because the pipelines are bottlenecked. There is no spare pipeline capacity to get the incremental oil out. We've got to build more pipelines before we can grow. You get to the back end of this year, and those pipelines come on, particularly in the Permian Basin, and you can get 2 million barrels a day of incremental production, you know, over a 12-month period. Now, if that happens, and this is acknowledging all the uncertainties in the oil market and putting it through a big Monte Carlo analysis, you know, my base case is I'm going to be 1 million barrels a day oversupplied next year. Even if I take the sort of 25% worst case scenarios about declines in Iran and Venezuela and Nigeria and Libya, we're still going to be oversupplied next year. And if we get an accommodative oil market, we could be 2 million barrels a day oversupplied next year. And then it gets even scarier because, once you unbottleneck these Permian pipeline bottlenecks, really shale grows and keeps growing, keeps growing, keeps growing. And so I run an oil market model that goes out to 2025. It's available on my website. All of my stuff is fully downloadable, fully unbundled. And I can be about 1 to 2 million barrels a day oversupplied all the way out to 2025. So, I mean, looking at me, you might be very aware that I am not the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia or OPEC, but if I were a big player in the oil market, I've been looking at that. I've been looking at those supply demand balances. And, you know, here's the interesting thing. If there was an oil price downturn in 2020, if we took oil to $30 a barrel for 6 months, you could delay 2.5 million barrels a day of shale growth, right? You know, we talked about shale just going gradually up and up and up and up once those pipelines get unbottlenecked. But if you have an oil price downturn, you push a big wall of that backwards. You know, this is a flexible resource where the rig count can move materially over a six month time frame. So if you had an oil price downturn in 2020, then you rerun that model out to 2025 and we're basically undersupplied all the way out to 2025. So, you know, this is the sort of thing I would be thinking about if I was an OPEC decision maker, is do we want an oil market that's going to be glutted all the way out to 2025? Or do we take a hit in 2020 and then have an oil market that's actually pretty strong in 2022, 2023, 2024, etc.? I think this is always where it gets speculative, and I don't want to be in the business of speculating, so I won't. But I would say that the most important thing, if I was an oil producer, looking down the barrels of that picture I just described, is you've got to be the most efficient company you can be. And this links wonderfully back to your first question about, you know, what's driven down the declines in marginal cost. If I may, I'd love to tell you a bit more about the story of why I'm on this technology adventure, because it really feeds into what we've been talking about.
Feel free.
I remember back in 2015, you know, going back to our earlier conversation about how, you know, the marginal cost of oil was $100 a barrel. You know, oil started falling and people started getting worried. I was one of them. But what really helped me get a bit less worried was starting going through what digital is doing to our industry and adding up all of these digital technologies coming through that lower decline rates, improve production efficiency, allow us to drill a well in the best possible place, allow us to predict when something is going to fail before it fails and fix it. And really, when you started going through these things, you realized that digital could take the marginal cost of offshore oil from $90 a barrel to about $40 a barrel. And that journey keeps continuing. And I had a moment out with the CEO of one of the large oil majors last year on a field trip. And we were there and we were talking with the company about their free cash flow targets. And one of the other analysts, great analyst, asked the CEO in this group, what's going on? These free cash flow targets you presented, I mean, they're unprecedented. No oil company has ever generated this much free cash flow ever. But how are we meant to believe that you can do it this time when we couldn't do it in the past? And the CEO said, well, look, it's really simple. It's driven by technology. You look at the technologies coming through our business right now, and they're transformational. We've never had anything like this. And you just can't see them because none of you are looking at them. And those kind of words like resounded in my head for about 6 months. And I realized, yes, somebody needs to be looking at these technologies. So you can take an oil platform and you can completely de-man it, right? And if you do that, then you don't need to build about 20% of the stuff that goes on an oil platform that's there to keep people alive on the middle of the ocean, because they're not there in the middle of the ocean. You can control all this stuff from shore. And when you do that, your CapEx goes down by 20%, your OpEx goes down by 80%, your production efficiency goes up by 2 to 3%, and that change alone can add $20 a barrel to the, can take off $20 a barrel to the break-even of an oil field. I'll give you another example. Distributed acoustic sensing. This is really nerdy stuff, but like you've got to know about this. So imagine you have an oil well. This is like the cutting edge, right? An oil well in an offshore environment. How do you know what's going on down there? Well, there are technologies coming through where you can now hear meter by meter by meter along that well. And if a little bit of that well stops flowing oil and starts flowing water, you can hear it in real time. And the very, very cutting edge of this, and I've seen patents of companies doing this, I've seen technical papers of companies doing this, is you could have what's called an inflow control device. And you could hear that little bit of the reservoir that's now started flowing water, and you could just turn that bit of the reservoir off. You could slide a little valve closed so that that watery bit is no longer flowing into your well. You look at companies that are doing this stuff, and I'm building models of this, you can double the free cash flow of the best run companies across this industry. So this is why, if I was an investor in oil, I don't care about the buyback next quarter. I don't care about who's going to beat quarterly earnings next quarter, because like these are nickels and dimes, and there are $50 bills coming through in this industry with the way some of these companies are using technology. And I think that is the opportunity here if you're an investor in this sector. And there's one final point, and then I promise I'll let you ask another question, which is this is the efficiency gain that our industry needs, right? If we don't get these efficiency gains through, we're going to waste our carbon budgets burning inefficient oil, and we need to get the oil industry as efficient as possible so that it can supply the world's oil needs for as long as they're needed in the cleanest, most efficient, lowest carbon way. So that's why I'm so excited about this. And it's what drives this deflation we've been talking about. Yeah.
So Rob, let's talk about that, I guess, a little more. In my head, I just wanted to, if you could take us down maybe some of the crucial price points for how much it costs to produce a barrel of oil. What is it for shale? What is it for, maybe the lowest cost producers? What's maybe the average? I don't know all these numbers in your head, but some general ideas on those. I didn't think I'd catch you out of left field with that one. But just for people to understand, and then, I kind of want to understand too, for people who want to make money in the space, what's the best way to allocate capital? Where are you allocating capital? I guess going back to the price area, you were talking about efficiency, does efficiency make things cheaper over time, even as it gets harder to find, as we start to reach like, you know, lower grades and, you know, all
the let's start with the last one of those, because, you know, it follows on so nicely from what we were just talking about. There's this wonderful myth in the oil industry that, you know, about global decline rates. And the myth is this, is that, you know, oil fields have a decline rate. That's not a myth. That is true. Over time, oil fields decline, they get mature, the pressure goes down, the water cut goes up, the oil flow per well goes down, the wells sort of roll over. But the myth is that, you know, every year, 5 million barrels a day of the world's oil disappears because of this decline rate. And then, you know, where do we get the replacement oil from? You start going through these technologies that I'm looking at, and the decline rates should be about 2 million barrels a day lower than they've been in the past because of all these digital technologies, improving the uptime of platforms, being able to drill better infill wells. I'm gonna resist reeling off a whole list here, but you know, that is one of the things that's able to keep the market well supplied. Your question about, you know, where would you be allocating capital in the space? I just see it like this: oil is a commodity industry. If you invest in this industry with the same technologies as everybody else, you're going to get the same returns as everybody else. So if you want to make an excess return in oil, the way to do that is to find companies that have better technology. So what we do is we built up a database of 3,000 patents going through all the different oil majors, 500 technical papers, and we score them. So instead of having a buy rating on one company and a neutral rating, you know, like I used to as a Wall Street analyst, I now have a technology ranking of each company. So, you know, which companies have the best technology across the board? And as an investor, you know, trying to make a good return over the long run investing in this sector, that's where I'd be looking. And maybe if you'd like to, we could talk about some of the leaders, you know, on the technology front, because I think that's where I'd be allocating capital.
Absolutely. Let's definitely talk about that. And just kind of how that relates to what you guys do at thundersetenergy.com, of course.
Perfect. Okay. Well, let's go through some of these areas and the companies that have the best technology in them. So we talk about shale. So let's keep going in shale. This is an area that is improving the technology pretty much faster than anywhere else. I'll tell you something remarkable, which is, you know, if you look at shale today, it's about 5% of the world's oil production. It's about a quarter of all the world's technical papers, right? And so that just gives you an idea for how quickly this is improving. Right at the forefront of it, you can rank this by going through all the technical papers and the patents. It's companies like EOG and Occidental, where you look at some of the things they're doing. I'll just give you an example of one: enhanced oil recovery in shale. This is something that, you know, really has been on the sidelines so far, hasn't been done at scale. But you look at the lab results and the trials in the field, you could double production of shale wells by using this technology. And so, you know, I mentioned those two, which was an indication of what they're doing across the board. But if you look in this enhanced oil recovery process in shale, they're the two at the cutting edge. EOG in the Eagle Ford and Oxy in the Permian. And that's something that I'm really excited about. And there's a big note on my website about that. Then if you go into the digital technologies, you know, the one that has really been impressing me on that front is BP. So this is a company that, you know, has been undergoing a technical transformation towards digital for over half a decade now. And it's really been driven by the upstream CEO, who's been the champion of change to move in this direction. I'll give you what my favorite example is a technology called Apex, which is developed with one of the machine learning big data companies out in California called Palantir. And what this is doing is listening to all the wells at the field in real time. And then it uses all of that, flows it into an algorithm that says, right, turn that well down, turn this well up, turn this well up, turn this well off. And every day they do a linear optimization to say which wells they should be turning up and turning down. And you look at the technical literature, you can get tens of thousands of barrels a day more oil out of an oil field doing this. This is one of the things that's going to, you know, lower decline rates around the industry, right? And this is still not done. So the next leg of this stuff is, you know, right now This feeds into a database, and an engineer goes and tweaks the wells. The next generation is that it links back to the wells, and the wells dynamically update in real time, and the algorithms get better because we're currently doing linear optimizations, which very, very basic, but this is going to become the realm of machine learning and really eventually get better reservoir performance. And you can see that in the technical literature. So I put BP on a pedestal there. Now we come on to gas. The two leaders in the market in gas technology are Shell and ExxonMobil. But I really want to go into what Shell is doing, because I think it's some of the most exciting work. Shell looks to integrate gas and electricity in its portfolio. So, make no mistake, this is the future of the energy industry. There's a wonderful stat that everybody should know, which is when you take a car and you replace it with an electric car, it gets about four times more efficient, right? And if you look at the energy industry going back to 1750, there's this long trend where we always try and get more and more and more and more and more efficient. And this is the next iteration of that. So I'm really excited for the long run opportunities that some of these companies are now starting to grasp, where they're saying, we're going to decarbonize the world's energy system. I'm going to do it by making energy better and more efficient. And we're going to get into these markets. So if you just go from a patent perspective, it's Shell's gas technologies and the way they're integrating that with electricity, which I think is cutting edge. And then there's the final one, which I'd like to mention, which is chemicals. So you asked that question earlier about the uses of oil that are not going away. The uses of oil making chemicals is not going away. Modern materials are a marvel, and really when you go through the patents, ExxonMobil is a chemicals company with an oil business attached to it. It has the most advanced chemicals technology of basically anyone you can look at. Those are some of the areas. And then maybe the final one that I would mention, which is a company that not many investors have on their radar at the moment, but they will, because they're about to do the world's largest IPO, Saudi Aramco. They have filed the most patents of any company I've looked at. They're some of the most detailed, most interesting patents. Their upstream technology is probably the best in the world, although limited to the areas where they operate, namely Saudi Arabia. And really from a technical perspective, what they're doing, if you're a technology nerd, kind of blow you away. So but there are some of the companies, some of the things at the leading edge. I know in this kind of short format, we've not been able to go into the weeds in any great detail, but a lot of this stuff is up on my website, and I'm always up for kind of engagement to go through some of it on some of the companies in more detail, because this patent work is something that we've done that I think is pretty unique. So there's lots more in that and lots more we could talk about.
Well, it's incredible the amount of knowledge that you have, Rob, to share with us. And, it's evident that you have a strong understanding that's beyond your average person would be the understatement of the week, right? So I appreciate your time with us here at Crush the Street. If people want to learn more about what you do, your website, what you offer, how you help people, please let them know where they can go and what they can expect to find.
Okay, so there's a little bit of a story behind this, which is, I think, great research should be democratized and made available to anybody who wants to consume it. And it should be transparent. You should be able to get the data behind it. You should be able to get the models. You should be able to talk to the analyst. So everything is up on my website, fully unbundled. Any report, any model is there, and you can go to www.thundersaidenergy.com. There's a tab called Insights, and literally every model we have on everything. What will be the costs of flying cars? What will demand offshore oil platforms cost? How far can you fly a battery-powered Boeing 747? Like, literally, you can download the models on any of this stuff. Specifically, written research, which is where you can find some of the views about some of the companies that's going to be of interest to, I'm sure, many people. So, I'd welcome any engagement there. And I'm always up for an interesting conversation. So I would also say to your listeners, if they'd like to LinkedIn me or email me, then I'd be delighted to talk further. And thank you for engaging with what I think is the most fascinating industry in the world. So we're very, very happy for more kind of conversations like this ahead.
We'll definitely plan this probably within the next 45 to 60 days, I would say, for a good update on what's going on in the oil sector, energy, and of course, how fast everything is going, and to really dive deeper, I think, into some of those companies, which you mentioned. So Rob West, everyone. Rob, thanks for coming on Crush the Street with me today.
All right. Thanks for having me.